we really want you to be a part of the team that is securing the information. If you're a Leidos person, secure it for Leidos. If you're for your other organization, secure your information. And if you see things that are going wrong, be a part of the team that is protecting the organization. It's important to everybody because attacks can bleed out to other organizations.
Welcome to Mindset, a Leidos podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Bell.
And I'm your host, Megan Good. Join us as we talk with pioneers in science, engineering, and technology to understand their creative mindset and share their stories of innovation. So today on Mindset, we're taking a different format. Our topic today is around cybersecurity, and as this is one of my areas of expertise, I joined the conversation, along with our senior technologist for cybersecurity, Arlette Hart, one of my esteemed colleagues, who in the past was the chief information security officer at the FBI.
So both you and Arlette discuss cybersecurity as not only a focus on technology, but the intersection between technology and people, and how working together, you can really protect against those threats and vulnerabilities.
Well, and certainly the technology is still important too, and it's ever changing, which creates both an opportunity for us to better detect and sense and react to activities happening and even predict. But then there's also that challenge of then we have to protect the things that we just put in, creating this vicious cycle. We talked about the multifaceted challenge of how to keep on top of that.
So in the conversation, you and Arlette both describe cybersecurity as addressing a puzzle, and that it's not just technology, but it's the pairing of technology and people to really solve complex problems and puzzles, which echoes a lot of what we've heard from other Mindset guests.
One part of our conversation that I really liked was talking about the future of work as we're in this very remote kind of environment right now with the current pandemic. But how is that going to influence what we do in the future? What technologies we engage, what protections we need? We're already seeing it affect our new normal from a security baseline. And we need those cool technologies. We need AI and ML. We need better analytics, better automation, better orchestration in order to be proactive against the threats.
Well, let's get started with the conversation. Welcome to Mindset. Today, we're talking cybersecurity. And since our co-host, Megan Good, is the VP Cyber Solutions Lead for our intelligence group, we're going to take a different format than our typical interview. Megan is joined by Arlette Hart, who's our senior technologist for cybersecurity. And they're going to have a conversation digging into some of today's issues within cyber. So let's get started. You're both experts in cybersecurity, but have had very different career journeys. Can you start with a little bit about your background and past roles?
Sure. Let me start first. And first of all, let me also say what a privilege it is to be on with Megan, who is clearly an expert in this field. And she and I work together a bit, and it's always just a joy to work with her. But I had a relatively circuitous route to reaching cybersecurity. I actually started in politics, and I had a history and political science major, and that is just not the first major you would think when you're saying, you know, what's your typical cybersecurity role. But it was really interesting because I came backwards into not just cybersecurity, but technology. I started off on the Hill working in policy there, and, you know, with changes in people on the Hill, you end up looking for other jobs. And one of the ones I found was writing system development methodologies. And from writing methodologies, I started doing some system development and led to doing integration and rollout of some enterprise capabilities and developing and managing infrastructure and then supporting procurement and those kind of things. And at one point I was working for the Senate, actually at the Sergeant at Arms office, and said, I really want to do something harder than this, because I was kind of getting bored. And I took a job, a random write an integration plan for cybersecurity capabilities at the FBI. I happened to have a security clearance that met their needs. And it was a 6-month assignment that turned into a cybersecurity career, when I took that job, I was absolutely new to cybersecurity. I don't think I knew what an intrusion detection system was until I actually took that job. And I never looked back. It was really an interesting career progression. And from there, I went to manage program for cybersecurity and went on to become a senior technologist with the FBI, and went on to become CISO with the FBI, and then came to Leidos to be senior technologist for cybersecurity.
That certainly is a circuitous path. And I would say for mine, it's a bit more straightforward. I started with Leidos as an intern while I was finishing up my bachelor's and my master's in computer science. So maybe not political science and history, a little bit more the expected route perhaps. But the team I joined supported information operations for the Department of Defense and our intelligence customers. So, of course, we can't say too much about that, but all in all, this work eventually turned into what's known today as cyberspace operations, and where, as a nation, we're striving to achieve information dominance in and through cyberspace. Over the years, I took on a number of technical leadership roles on key projects, including leading our consulting line of business for a commercial cybersecurity team at the time, before focusing on applying data science and engineering to improve cyber operations, you know, getting back to my roots. My focus area there has landed in how we translate cyber activity into terms that non-experts understand, and how to do that in a timely manner through smart automation and integration, as well as really cool graphics that tell a story and highlight where we can maneuver or fix next. As a Leidos Technical Fellow, I lead research projects in this area in cybersecurity. And in my current role, I lead our cyber solutions development within the intelligence group, as well as direct our solution architect program for Leidos and host this Mindset podcast with Bridget. It's busy.
Yes. And as you can see, there are very two distinct journeys from the kind of circuitous, almost falling into a role that was supposed to be a 6-month assignment and turned into a career, to a more straightforward path and being with Leidos from your internship to now all of these leadership roles. So thinking back to the start, what got you interested in a career on cybersecurity?
I think for me, you know, it certainly is a degree of hard work and luck. Is when I was at the time graduating, you know, cybersecurity wasn't what it is today, but part of my coursework in college was in cryptography and then following up with network security and data security. And I think I just got obsessed with the puzzle of it all. It's a matter of there's lots of moving parts. There's lots of pieces that are influenced by things you can control and things you can't control. And then there's the technology behind it that no matter what, it's always changing. And so you have to stay on top of technical fields, and then you have to figure out the best way to secure it, which is really more about how you work with people, how you work, you know, kind of in these societal norms too. It's just fascinating to me.
I agree. And I take it a little bit from the other side. Also, I like a challenge just like Megan on this one. And it's like, and this one's a big one. It mixes technology and, believe it or not, a lot of social sciences, including like political models and motivations and historical realities and, you know, real politic or whatever they call it now. And there's a lot of complexities and it's hard. And I like things that are hard. The space is so multifaceted and the range of disciplines, they mirror not just the realm of society, but they also mirror all of the IT world, you know, from mobile to big data to AI, ML, and legacy versus innovative technology, and how to address all of those kind of holistically and protecting all of it is a big, big challenge. It's easy to think of attacks being about technology, and they are, but there is a human being on either end of those attack vectors, and there's somebody trying to do something to somebody else at each side of it, and knowing why they're doing it or what they're doing and what their kind of motivations are, there's a big part of that that goes to what does that threat really look like. And on the victim end, it's not just the secure at all costs, because their motivations are also different. They may want to protect things, but they want to protect things at a level where they're not losing more money in the protection than they are in the value of the product itself. So it's a really hard question, because learning how to protect things properly, it's easy to say, oh no, we want to just be secure. But it's like a lot of times people don't just want to be secure. They mostly just want that security to have happened to them. So it's the whole multifaceted realm of this discipline is what's really interesting to me.
I find it really interesting that you both describe your interest in cybersecurity by saying it's that intersection of technology and people, because I think you're right. When you think cybersecurity, you're thinking hackers and attacks and vulnerabilities and not necessarily the social and people side of it. So I really enjoyed that that's what brought both of you into these careers. And I also want to go more into your past experiences. So with Megan here at Leidos and Arlette with your more indirect path and being the CISO at FBI, what would you both consider the biggest threat to cybersecurity today?
For me, it is, I'm just going to broad brush one, unevenness and unknowns. When you look at cybersecurity, to me, it looks like a fractal. It's like at the top level, it's uneven and jagged. And as you go down into each and every organization, it's uneven and jagged. And the interest in it is uneven and jagged at different places in different organizations. So this is caused by a couple of factors, of course. One, obviously, the people. Some people take it seriously and some people don't. And when they do take it seriously, they take it seriously in this area, but then they're like, oh, but not that. And so there's an amount of that. And some organizations are very diligent, and organizations that those organizations rely on may or may not be diligent. So that's the whole supply chain question, which you've probably heard of. There's also the legacy versus new technology question. It's really hard to retire old systems. In any organization, it just gets challenging to say, yeah, well, I don't need that anymore, because there's that one last little piece of it that some other critical capability is depending on, no matter how much you want to get rid of that. So then you end up, from a cybersecurity perspective, still protecting a legacy system that is barely able to function at all. And new technology is either delayed because it isn't protected, so then the organization can fall behind, or it's deployed without adequate protection, so you have too much risk, or it's deployed without anyone knowing about it, so you have the shadow IT piece of it. So that's kind of having that balance among those pieces is also hard. And the other piece is the cost of protecting versus the operational needs of the business. All of these factors feed into your decision-making about how much you're putting into cybersecurity. And both business and government have the same challenges with this. You know, government has its mission. Nobody in government has unlimited funds to devote to cybersecurity. When they start getting more money, the first thing they think of is not like, wait, I should just, you know, beef up my cybersecurity. They think, oh, this is another cool thing that I can do, which just turns into the whole legacy versus new technology thing. To me, that's the biggest, those two, the unevenness and the unknowns, are the biggest challenges in cybersecurity.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I love the way that you say that about things being uneven and jagged. Because really, when I think about this, it's the large attack services, but they're not even large. They're quite small. And the fact of the matter is that a vulnerability in one spot, there's such an asymmetric effect and impact that you can have on that, on a larger network, just by one unique vulnerability. And then you can propagate that further from an attacker's perspective. And from a defender's side, how are you ever going to figure out what that one thing was? It's almost impossible to see all those jagged edges that Arlette describes, unless you really are very honest with yourself, unless you can keep up with this with tons of sensor data, if you can, you know, store all of that information over time. I mean, the cards just stack against you very quickly of what capability you would have to have that insight and that visibility and that knowledge, and then be able to act on it as well. They're just, we're at this limit. As Arlette said, there's a limit of how much you can spend on this, but there's a limit of how much that's physically possible for you to know and to action. And I think we're hitting to where we have newer technology and time to help us address that, but it actually makes it harder because there's newer technology to look after. And so it's this problem that feels like it keeps building on itself, and you can very quickly become overwhelmed by the threat there. And I think being overwhelmed is probably the third thing that I would add in to the unevenness and the unknowns, as Arlette said. It's just the fact of the matter is there's just so much. But I think that we're at a pivotal time where we can go forward smartly and start to address those areas that we can control and bring it into some semblance of really knowing what we do know and protecting against even those things that we don't.
And that's a good segue into my next question, because I know with cybersecurity, you talk a lot about threats and vulnerabilities, but trying to look at the more positive side, what are those technologies, those advancements in cybersecurity that you're really the most excited about, whether that's coming in the next year or more longer term in the next 5 years?
Right. And I would say in the recent past, you know, as I just discussed, it's a lot about automation and it's been workflow automation and how to get these use cases done so we're not wasting people's time. We can leverage machines. As we move forward, I think taking that the next step, the one that I'm most excited about seeing mature is deception technologies. How can we mimic that uneven and jagged looking network to a potential attacker so that they think they're handling one type of environment, but in reality, we are more protected within some sort of a fortified wall, and we're deceiving them of what they think they're going to be able to accomplish. To me, that's taking it to this next level. It's a bit sci-fi, but it's really one of those things that's emerging. And from the vantage point of cyberspace operations, it's a very powerful technology.
And I have to jump in because when you mentioned it's a bit sci-fi, I think a lot of the topics that we go into in mindset do have that a little bit sci-fi feel. So Arlette, what are you most excited about?
So I don't know that they're like the cutting edge technology, but I think we have under leveraged them at this point in time for cyber in particular. So AI ML, of course. I think it can really make a difference. I think we're at the edge of being able to make a difference with it. But I think I've been thinking about coining the term detect in depth and protect in depth. So that we talk about like recursive detection and protection capabilities. So it's like, we don't look at things once. We look at things for their first level of, you know, okay, that's a problem. But then we start looking at like, when we look at more of those logs, looking longitudinally, looking at patterns of behavior that you couldn't necessarily see just by looking at things at a point in time. And one of the things, one of the capabilities that enables that, of course, is, you know, cloud capabilities, which just make it much easier to store your logs. Now you have to store them correctly and safely so that you're not putting them at risk, because that's sort of, you know, an important component of your world. But if you can put your logs in a place where you can store not just a day of your packet capture, but do some serious amount of packet capture, and then run big data solutions against your packet capture and looking at different kinds of ways that people will be taking your information out, then you can do low and slow and start doing detection at different levels than you were able to before. And I think those are the places where we really can make a difference in what the threat vectors look like. I agree with Megan about the automation and the orchestration. You know, let's get rid of some of these commodity problems. We shouldn't be spending a lot of time on those things, but we do need to make them actionable accurately with the, you know, the SOAR capabilities and getting the commodity threats completely out of the way. And the advantage of that also, we really want to make it more costly to the attacker to attack and make it, you know, make us hard targets. We don't want to be the easy thing that, as Megan was talking about, the threat can just expand over time. We want to be a hard target that is easily able to patch and manage the infrastructure and not have those vulnerabilities just exposing us all the time.
So two things stood out, Megan describing it as that fortified wall that you're talking about, Arlette, that making you stronger. But I also really loved the detect in depth and protect in depth, because as you describe it as these jagged edges, that the farther deeper you go, the more jagged edges there are in those unevenness and unknowns and overwhelming. But if you can detect those in depth and protect those in depth, you're going to build up that fortified wall. So we talked about what long-term you're excited about. Let's bring it back and talk about what's happening in the more near term. So as we see more and more people working from home and having to access various networks remotely, have you all seen an increase in threats or attempted cyber attacks?
Kind of. There's more activity, but the more activity can just be because there's more activity because people are doing things differently than they did before. It's hard to really attribute it to because they're working from home. The traffic itself looks different than it did before. And whether it is because it's the time of year or because people are working from home or because there's an increased attack vector, it's hard to say because causality is very difficult in cybersecurity. That said, we pay a lot of attention to that, and we make sure that we are tracking aggressively what's going on. And when environments change, which is a thing that happens in cybersecurity all the time, we adjust fire and make sure that we do understand what that change in environment means from a threat perspective. This is just another new capability to a cybersecurity perspective. Working from home is just the same as mobility in some ways. You have a different way you are reaching your critical data. One of the things that I think is true, though, is, you know, the security is a team sport. I'm using air quotes. You just can't see them. And I think it's more true right now when people are socially distant than when we're all in the office together. Responsibility for reporting anomalous activities. This really is something that we would ask people to do all the time. We really want you to be a part of the team that is securing the information. If you're a Leidos person, secure it for Leidos. If you're for your other organization, secure your information. And if you see things that are going wrong, be a part of the team that is protecting the organization. It's important to everybody because attacks can bleed out to other organizations.
I definitely think with that, I first of all cannot believe I said the word fortified wall before, but Bridget, you're so good to remind me of that, because really it's one of those that there isn't a wall. It doesn't exist anymore. There isn't an edge to a network. And as Arlette says, right now, people working from home, that's mobility. That's the way things have been. I think for us, we're experiencing that at a larger scale right now to keep our employees safe. However, our home networks just aren't the same as enterprise networks. The level of investment in security devices and even our own practices just isn't the same when you're at your house in your yoga pants versus at the office. I think you have a different level of decorum to that people side of what you would do and what you expect is normal than maybe what you do at your home, where it's some of your, you know, leisurely activities can take place at the same time as work ones. And that mixing of that traffic, I'm sure, is something that Arlette and the team are seeing, and that it just looks different. And we really need those good analytics. We need that good automation to help us figure out, is that really somebody coming in from, you know, an IP in Colorado, or are they coming from some other country? And does that even matter? It's just really different between home and the enterprise. But I think what is kind of interesting, and with the team of experts that I work with here, what I'm blown away by is their at-home labs that can rival enterprise labs and enterprise networks, of where they have way better security than, you know, some of enterprises are willing to do, because they have the ultimate visibility on their house. And so I think we're seeing what are some kind of cool ways that you can implement some of these new technologies on a really small scale. I think if they weren't home, they wouldn't have the chance to really play with that. So that's one silver lining to this situation that we're in today.
That's a fun perspective. I am curious now, for both of your home networks, what kind of security you have in place, being two of our most cybersecurity experts in the company.
I knew you were going to ask that. And I just have to say that sometimes the best security is obscurity. No comment.
I'd rather not give away my security posture.
All right. We won't reveal any secrets here. So if you were able to solve one cybersecurity challenge right now, I know it's going to be hard to narrow it down, but what would that be?
I think for me, it's information sharing. It's a concept that is talked about a lot between the government and commercial industries, and particularly for us within the defense industrial base, of where we want to share when we discover a new attack vector. We want to share indicators of threat activity. But the challenge just becomes that there's so much, and that some of the parts are valuable, some of the parts aren't. All of that really changes over time, and its value changes over time, and it's hard to crack the nut. And I really think that cybersecurity isn't the only field with this challenge. I mean, we're finding that right now with the news about COVID, you know, when you know something about COVID-19 versus, you know, what you heard, you know, weeks ago, it's all different. But it still is one of those things that we're trying to figure out how we can share that information without breaking the internet and without making it so diluted that it doesn't matter anymore. I want that solved.
That's a good one. That's not the one I chose, but that's a good one. I like that.
Well, thanks. I figure you pick something different.
Yeah, I would wave my magic wand and make it easier to, well, do everything in cybersecurity because, you know, most of it's hard. But to me, the most important would be to know what risk looks like so people can really apply the right resources and to balance their operational needs against the risk of loss. And the result would be something close to the right answer. There's been a lot of work in this area, but it's still just really, really challenging to do this. And you know, back to the fractal problem, every edge is another place where you have another problem with this. Other disciplines like, you know, fires and automobile accidents and things like that, there's enough information to allow, you know, actuaries to understand what the risk means. But with cybersecurity, we're really not there. And it's even harder in part because the victim still has everything that they had before the crime. So it's not like they lost, you know, their car or their house. They still have the data that they had, hopefully, or not always with the same level of integrity, but they still have it, but they don't know whether they are the only ones who have it. So they don't know, you know, am I sharing it? And what is it worth to them to share? So that's the piece that I would really like to crack, because then you could make real decisions around what should my cybersecurity investment be and make it so that you have a real risk appetite related to it.
So in this conversation, we've talked about both of your really unique career journeys, and then also some of the technologies that you're seeing and are excited about for the next 1 to 5 years. So I'm curious, if we look back to when you first got into cybersecurity, is there a technology that we have now that you wish we had back then?
So I would go with big data analytics. Being able to look and link critical elements together so that they can really see what is the vulnerability picture, especially when the attackers were much less sophisticated and we could have tied a lot of things and saved a lot of time and money and become much more sophisticated earlier if we'd had much better data analytics early on. I think that would have been a game changer 10 years ago, and we could have just changed the vector of how things are done. I think it also probably would have informed a lot of vulnerability management and helped get patching where it needs to be and had people focusing much earlier on closing the cyber coding or the coding gaps with, you know, some secure DevOps instead of just DevOps, and really helped us push what the cyber narrative is.
So Arlette, since you took the good one, I'm going to say SOAR tools, security orchestration and automated response. And for me, for those of you who don't know, that's a capability that takes in inputs from different kinds of security sensors and detection systems that we have. It does things that a person would normally do and then starts to actually affect some of the other systems that are doing protection. So it's one of those that, you know, things come in, it takes action, and then it makes magic happen for us. And it's all set to these different playbooks. And I think about the first set of automated tools that I coded up for our group way back when. And I just wish that I had them as playbooks. I wish we could have put them in. We would have been so much further ahead. We would have been tackling the more sophisticated challenges sooner. And I just think it's one of those classes of capabilities that are becoming a de facto standard across lots of enterprises, thanks to a number of different vendors in this space.
I don't think I went on that. I thought SOAR was also a really good one.
I think they work together, though. I mean, that's the best part, is one tool alone doesn't do it. It's a bigger solution that we need. And it's finding the way that you're getting the right combination of inputs that give you the kind of insight and visibility that you need through those analytics, that you're actually actioning it in a way that really is protective.
And it's funny because both of them assume that you have the right information in there.
Oh, that's so true that you shared it, to my point before, but that you're also generating it yourself within the bounds of your enterprise, that you know what those devices are, you know what kind of software they're running, you know what you have out there to detect it. I mean, it's a lot of those critical security controls, which I think sometimes we can feel like is a compliance checklist, but without it, we really can't do any of the good stuff. We can't do the good threat analysis. We can't do the good kind of protection that is absolutely necessary.
And that the sensors are working and working properly and giving you the right telemetry and the information that you need, and that you're getting it in all the time when you're supposed to be getting it in, and all those little heartbeat kind of things that are also truly critical to this.
Right. And even beyond that, if you think about the kinds of deployed networks that we work with, you know, they're in these remote locations sometimes, right? Where the network extends, even as we talked before about mobility, there might not be great bandwidth to bring all of that information back. So it's a matter of how you're choosing the right kind of data that is really going to inform those risk-based decisions that you talked about, Arlette.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It gets, did we say something about hard problems before? Yeah.
And multifaceted and interconnected.
Exactly.
We could talk about this forever, probably, Bridget. And hopefully we haven't lost you in our conversation.
Not at all. This has been, I love it. I just want to sit back and listen to you. So is there any other topics that you all want to dig into or talk through?
I think the question I always have is, what's the transition like to go from being with the government to really trying to ensure the security of a very mission-oriented agency to coming to a company like Leidos and looking at our networks, our reach, our data? You know, what lessons did you apply in that transition?
It's so very different. The perspective from government is you are protecting the critical data. For, you know, Leidos has that same idea. We protect government's critical data also. So there's an element of commonality with that. But looking at it from the being in government and being the one responsible for making sure that that data is protected, you are on the front line in that place. And you know, you're the one who is the reactor to that. When I left government, it was okay, I'm leaving that piece. And there was no taking it back. It was the, okay, I now sleep nights instead of staying up all night. It was a big weight, because it's very heavy doing that from the government perspective and making sure that the protections are in place and working with the people and making sure all of the elements are doing what they need to be doing 24/7. I'm not saying it's not heavy here too, because I think it is. I think it is the same kind of weight, but the ultimate responsibility question is a little bit different. But when you come here, you still need to do that same level of diligence. It just looks a little different. And the mission turns into a different animal. From the government perspective, you do that from a, this is what the mission is. We accomplish the mission. There's still a balance. There's still the, here is the balance. Here's the money that you have to do this thing. Here's the mission that you have to do within that type, that amount of money. But you don't have the financial incentive. So one of the risk questions, when I talk about risk, when you do that from the private sector perspective, there's a financial cost to what the risk is on both sides. So it is, this is what your cybersecurity budget is. This is what your risk cost, how you're monetizing your risk. When you do that from the government perspective, you can't really monetize risk that way. Yeah, they have budgets and things like that. But when they lose something, they don't lose money like that. They lose PII lives, things that have non-monetary value, but are extremely highly valuable. So it sort of looks a lot different. Does that make sense?
That does. And I bet the calculations there are completely different when you're talking about risk. You know, it's not just the very rote or almost accounting like look at risk. It's, there's another nuance. There's a lot of shades in there.
Exactly. Okay. So me to you, what's kept you at Leidos this whole time? What's kept you engaged all the way through?
I think Gwen has always been finding the next challenge and having advocates who support me in finding those challenges. So when I joined as an intern, the group that I worked for was ready to offer me a full-time position, right? And it was one of those where I knew what I was getting into, but I knew that there was a lot of growth and room to grow with that group. And then from there, it was I would say, as I look back on the course of my career, every 12 months to 18 months, I've taken on a new challenge. Now, that usually means that I haven't let something go, hence the lots of hats and roles. But I really like that I think at every turn, I've been able to see what's the latest in technology and explore through different research areas, which piques my interest and keeps the challenge going. But then at the same time, take on leadership roles where I feel like I'm giving back and supporting other really smart and bright people. I love connecting up different technical ideas. And I feel like as a tech fellow and as a solution architect, that's our calling here, right? Is to connect the dots to solve these bigger problems and realize that it takes multifaceted thinking that, you know, we all kind of learn through different cyber operations kind of work. But it also takes figuring out where you need the mix of depth as well as breadth. And I see that a lot across Leidos. I find it really energizing. And there's a lot of job satisfaction here. It's a lot about the people I work with. And it's a lot about the opportunities that we're given to really make a difference.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of opportunities at Leidos. And there's some seriously smart people here. And it's just been really interesting to work with the people here. I agree.
Sometimes it feels like a really long time, but other times it goes by so quickly. And I think right now we're really seeing this big evolution in how work is changing. And I can only imagine how much more we're going to be able to do virtually to really pull in our international team and our team with our customers, our vendor partners, as well as the technologists that we have here. It's an exciting time.
It really is. This has been a forcing function for how to really work remotely. And I think we're going to learn a lot from it. And I think it's got some serious upsides. So it'll be really interesting. Yeah.
So let's wrap up with one final question. What guidance or advice do you have for our listeners as we close this conversation?
Well, I would say as a problem solver myself, what I would recommend is that you have to work through the fear that I think has come with cybersecurity and with the threats and the challenges that we've talked about, and really start to identify what are the problems that you can address and prioritize what's the order that you can do it. And I know that sounds very simple to say, and it's, you know, we've talked a lot about technology, we've talked about people, that's probably the process element of it, but taking it step by step, you'd be amazed how far you come. And I think really having a plan, having some actions, being consistent about what you're doing when you bring in new technology, when you incorporate new security procedures and controls, all of that helps the greater good as long as you can get through that process and make sure that you're reaching the goal that you want to get to. So take your time, work through it, and identify the problems you can solve.
Well, those were good. I also have three. And the first one is work and play well together. This is, again, a team sport. Remember the railroads early on, they didn't have standards for how far apart the ties should be or the rails should be. Eventually, they got to the place where they had standards. What we need a lot is for industry to work together and establish standard bases for building so that we can all win. All of these boats can float higher. And the rising tide raises all boats. No one wins as long as there's large swaths of the country or the world that are losing. This is kind of like a prisoner's dilemma. And it's like, if one person just does all of their pieces but doesn't bring everybody along, we all lose. We all have to be together on this game to win this game. For the big players, I'd really like to ask them to consider eliminating a lot of those simple problems, patching and updates. Make more things backward compatible. Make it so that people can really support legacy. The objective is for them to be able to be secure more than for them to be able to upgrade. Enabling people to really secure their infrastructure, even if it's not what you want their infrastructure to be. I know it's easier said than done, but it really is important. It is a lot easier said than done. And I understand the backward compatibility and there's limits to it and all those kind of things. But somehow we need to get past the place where a patch can break your entire infrastructure. And that's kind of where we are. So better attention to how to patch and what it means to update and making sure that we have better cybersecurity. Finally, keep pushing the front edge. I think there's a lot of room for thought leadership in here, and we need to think in new ways and do things differently. And we have to really make everybody a hard target. That's my input.
Yes, thank you both, Megan and Arlette. This was a wonderful conversation. To all our listeners, as always, please, if you enjoy this podcast, share it with your colleagues. And to learn more, visit Leidos.com/mindset.